Around the world, women carry more of the load than men do, shouldering a disproportionate share of the unpaid caregiving labor, often while working in underpaid jobs. What sets American women apart is that they're expected to hold it together without the kind of institutionalized support systems on which women in other countries rely. Consider a young woman I'll call Akari. All the names of the people whose stories I'll tell in this book have been changed for privacy reasons. It's the least I can do in exchange for their generosity with their stories and their time. One chilly morning in November 2021, I talked to Akari by phone during the brief window she had between dropping off her kids and starting her shift at one of her three part-time jobs. Between those three jobs, two weekday jobs in retail and a weekend shift at a high-tech manufacturing facility, Akari, who was biracial, white, and Japanese, was spending roughly 50 hours a week working, plus another 10 hours a week commuting. Even so, her earnings were typically between $2,800 and $3,000 a month, varying depending on how many hours she could get. That's far less than the $7,300 a month living wage for a household with an adult and two children in the Indiana town where Akari and her children live. And it has left Akari with nearly $20,000 in debts and forced her to work so many hours for pay that she rarely gets to spend time with her kids. This wasn't always the case. When I first met Akari in 2019, she was pregnant with her son, Ren, staying home full-time with her two-year-old daughter, May, and engaged to her long-term partner, Theo, who was white, and who was running his own home maintenance business, which brought in about $30,000 a year. Akari had left the workforce when May was born in 2017. At the time, Akari was making less than $10 an hour working in retail, and she calculated that she and Theo would end up with more money at the end of each month if she quit than if she kept her job and paid for full-time childcare. Things were stable for Akari and Theo up until the summer of 2020 when Theo died unexpectedly, the victim of a seemingly random act of gun violence that years later has yet to be explained. The first few months after Theo's death were a blur of grief and government forms. Like roughly half of all U.S. adults, Theo didn't have any life insurance, and the little they had in savings wasn't enough to keep paying rent. Amid pandemic layoffs and with local childcare centers closed, Akari had little hope of finding a job, let alone one that would pay all their bills. Relying on family also wasn't an option. Akari's mother had moved back to Japan to live with her own parents after getting divorced when Akari was a teen. So, with guidance from a local nonprofit organization, Akari applied for welfare and food stamps. She also got on the wait list for an apartment in a public housing community, and she and the kids moved into a shelter to improve their spot on the list. Relying on public assistance was challenging for Akari emotionally. Growing up in a middle-class suburban family, Akari never knew anyone on welfare, likely because the program's strict eligibility requirements are designed to ensure that only a tiny fraction of Americans receive cash support. Akari had also learned from conservative family members to be skeptical of government dependency. "I believe welfare is temporary," she explained resolutely. "It's not supposed to be a lifestyle. It's other people's tax money, so when you need it, you use it, you appreciate it, but it's not a lifestyle."